With interest rates near zero, Australia's economy rebounding and pumped with massive amounts of stimulus, and the coronavirus all but eradicated from our shores, our property markets are looking healthy and starting the year off on a strong footing. The stats show that after the nation went into lockdown last year, national property values fell overall a cumulative 2.2% over the 5 months from May to September. And of course, this was led by falls in Melbourne and Sydney that were most affected by the lockdowns. But of course, this was nothing like those calamitous falls many predicted. Then from October, as Melbourne emerged from its second lockdown, confidence returned to the markets. Dwelling values started to rise again, and they ended up 2020 up about 3%, driven by pent-up demand by buyers able to buy with very low interest rates. Now, on the back of continuing increasing confidence, strong economic growth, much stronger growth than anyone expected, record low mortgage rates, and the emergence of a vaccine rollout plan, many commentators are now forecasting very strong house price growth in 2021. In fact, some are suggesting double-digit value growth is possible this year. Well, will these forecasts be right, or will they be wrong like the forecast for last year? In today's show, I'm going to have a long chat with Dr. Andrew Wilson, Australia's leading housing economist, and we're going to share some lessons that we can all learn from 2020. And after discussing some of the data already in for our economy and our property markets, data that's already come in this year, Dr. Wilson's going to give you some of his forecasts for the year ahead. Andrew is also going to give you his thoughts on that media release that received a lot of publicity, you know, the one regarding the Reserve Bank's paper suggesting that low interest rates could lead to a 30% increase in property values over the three-year period. We cover a lot in today's show, and I'm sure you're going to find Andrew's straight-talking techniques are going to help clarify some of the mixed messages in the media at present. And as always, I'm going to share with you a mindset message. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
The pieces of the property puzzle are falling into place and our property markets are on the move again, and they're going to perform strongly in 2021. Last October, in our regular weekly Property Insider videos, Dr. Andrew Wilson announced that Australia's property markets had turned the corner after being put on pause by the coronavirus-induced lockdowns, which caused the recession we made us have. But now it's official, our property markets are performing strongly again. In fact, some commentators are even calling it a boom, with property values rising. More Australians are now looking for homes, they're upgrading their homes, they're looking for investments, but there are fewer properties on the market. So as we enter a new year, and in fact, a new property cycle, it's interesting to look back and see what lessons we can take out of 2020 to make 2021 a better year in property. And who better to discuss that than Dr. Andrew Wilson, Australia's leading housing economist and chief economist of My Housing Market. Hi, Andrew.
Yes, hello, Michael, and dare I say it, Happy New Year.
Well, it's a little bit belated, and yes, we have spoken offline a few times, yes. But the first time officially online this year, so thanks. And we look back, it was an unusual year, it was an unusual recession, despite a deep recession, chronically weak wages, high unemployment figures, underemployment rates, and Australia's accumulating strong gains in their wealth, our property markets have been remarkably resilient. So today, Andrew, I'd like to first of all look at some of the lessons that we could take out of last year, or in fact the last couple of years, to make it easier moving forward this year. And then let's have a look ahead, what could be ahead for our property markets. So, Andrew, what lessons would you take out of what we experienced last year?
Well, the first thing was, Michael, of course, that we're all in that unknown territory. When the coronavirus restrictions hit, we didn't know what the future was going to hold, how long the restrictions would last, how severe they would be. But I think the first lesson was that it was really the physical constraints to property transactions that impacted the market, rather than any change or any movement in the underlying supply and demand dynamics of our housing market. So the cycle was sort of put on hold as we had those physical restrictions. And of course, there was a significant degree of uncertainty as well that constrained buyers and sellers, not just the physical constraints. But once those restrictions were eased, the property cycle really moved back to where it was prior to those restrictions. And it's really been in catch-up mode over the second part of the year since the restrictions were eased. Of course, we had a bump in that easing with the Melbourne situation. They had a lockdown in spring, but once that was relieved, once the shutdown restrictions ended in Melbourne, it's also moved back into catch-up mode. And in fact, given that it had more to catch up with, it's been a very strong finish to the year for Melbourne, and I anticipate a very strong start to the year as well. But it is just catch-up energy, Michael. We are moving back into the fundamentals of the cycle. And that's the first and most significant lesson from last year, is that it was a black swan event. We needed to continue to look at underlying supply and demand dynamics. And really, it was all about the pushing of the pause button that impacted our markets during lockdown.
Well, the black swan event happens every year, whether you call it an X factor, a black swan event. The year before, it was the surprise upswing after the surprise election result when the Liberals came in. So sometimes these black swan events are on the positive side, sometimes on the negative side. And Andrew, I guess I've learned over the years that every decade or so, the world breaks, like last year, like 2008 with the global financial crisis. So there's small events in every decade or so, there's something reasonably big. But I think what you pointed out is important. Stick to the fundamentals. Remember the fundamentals. And I think a lesson I learned last year is be really careful whose forecasts you listen to. Everyone seems to have an opinion on property, but you know what they say about opinions? They're like belly buttons. Everyone's got one, but they're not very useful, Andrew.
Yeah, that's true, Michael. But I guess it's because of our very strong connection to housing and housing markets, either as investors or owner-occupiers, we do tend to gravitate towards particularly the extreme end of the commentariat. And that extreme end, particularly the negative end, gets plenty of airplay and plenty of clicks. And of course, it's very tempting for those that promote and pursue the negative part of doomsaying in our housing markets. It's almost beyond temptation for them to continue to peddle that type of nonsense. But again, last year, the other lesson was we've had two consecutive years of nonsense peddling. And will we see it again this year, Michael? Well, we might, but I guess that ice is even thinner for those that do predict those sharp falls in house prices than it was last year and the year before.
I think another lesson is there isn't one Australian property market. So when people say the Australian property market is doing this, be careful. Even when they say the Sydney or the Brisbane property market, because there are markets within markets, and we really saw last year how local factors are important in affecting house values, supply and demand, things like that.
Yeah, look, that's right, Michael. But the thing about looking at individual market performances is, of course, there are local supply and demand factors. But when we're affected, all markets are affected by big picture issues. And the first one, of course, are interest rates that do affect lending, because interest rates are set on a national basis. And we also had a national impact from coronavirus shutdowns as well. So each market did move into pause mode. So in a way, it was, I guess, an overarching impact on the national housing market. And once those impacts through the shutdown were eased, we got back to the local factors of supply and demand, and that's what we're seeing generate activity at the moment.
Well, you made a good point that the housing market is very dependent upon finance. We saw that when APRA started to change the rules way back in 2014, and then the Haines Royal Commission, and then last year with the drop of interest rates. So property investment is really a game of finance with some houses thrown in the middle.
Well, that's right, Michael, and we've been quite critical, I guess, of those APRA policies. Certainly the impacts on the supply side of the housing market have been profound. If it hadn't been, obviously, for our migration restrictions through border shutdowns, we would now be entering a period of chronic undersupply and housing shortages. And that's not something that would necessarily push up prices, because in a low interest rate environment, that becomes problematic to be able to keep pushing up prices through a shortage of property. But what it does mean is, and I don't want to be a doomsayer as I've just been bemoaning, but we need to house our society. And if we've got a shortage of housing, that becomes a problem. And we only have to look at places such as the US to see where the shortage of housing can move into some terrible social issues. So be very careful of interfering in our housing market dynamics. I think APRA have to some degree paid the price for that by the collapse in new supply that we've seen coming through as a consequence of that, and also the imbalances that it causes in the housing market overall, Michael.
If we have a look at some of the results that have come out in the first month of the year in January, Andrew, it seems like we may even have that V-shape economic recovery that most people didn't think we were going to have. We talked maybe about having a stepwise recovery, but the economic indicators so far look very positive.
Well, the unemployment rate's heading down to have a 5 in front of it, Michael. The Melbourne Victorian economy is recovering as expected once shutdown ended there. Participation rates, that's a proportion of the population that is in work or looking for work, are now back to or even above in some states' cases where they were prior to the coronavirus shutdown. So it has been a remarkable bounce back. So there's still some way to go in terms of job creation. So there's still people looking for work and not finding work at the same rate as prior to coronavirus. But of course, we are gradually moving back to a more normalised workplace environment. And when that occurs, we'll get back to the sort of job numbers that we had prior to coronavirus. And that means, of course, the unemployment rate will continue to fall. But it hasn't but just been a return to work. We've also been creating jobs, Michael, which is interesting. Opportunity, the new economy, the new workplace environments have actually stimulated new businesses. And some businesses have actually done very well out of these changed circumstances. So adaptation to change, and Australians do that pretty well, Michael. And some Australians are making very good business outcomes as a result of that. So, yeah, the economy's done well. It's still got some way to go, of course, and some headwinds ahead. But certainly that low 6% unemployment rate that we have now is a far cry from the 10, 20, 30% predictions that were made about 9 months ago, is it not?
Let's be clear. You never made those, and you were always suggesting they wouldn't even get to 10%. And that's why I love having a chat with you regularly, because of the perspective you bring. So between November and December, an extra 50,000 Aussies found work, 35,500 of them were full-time jobs. So that's actually good, not just the part-time jobs. So re-employed a lot of the people who lost their jobs. But as you say, it's going to take some time for the last group of jobs to come back. There's still industry suffering.
Yes.
The other interesting point was housing loan approvals. Now, all these statistics we're now mentioning, they go back to last year before we've even really moved fully out of our difficult times. But the latest housing approvals showed there was a huge surge, 24.4% above pre-pandemic levels. And in particular, owner-occupiers. Investors are a bit back, but owner-occupiers and first home buyers are in the market, Andrew.
Yeah, look, that owner-occupier activity is at record levels, Michael, and it's what clearly is driving the market. We've seen a pretty reasonable uptick in first home buyer numbers, but first home buyer numbers are still well below the peak of that particular sector's cycle, and that was back in 2009 during the GFC boost to first home buyers then. So we're still not at record levels, certainly for first home buyers, but we are at record levels for owner-occupiers. And I do think it's that value proposition, that value equation that is driving owner-occupiers. Remembering, Michael, that in Melbourne and Sydney, where most of the owner-occupiers are active, house prices are still below where they were in 2017. So again, it's the fundamentals that are driving the market. Affordability is very, very high in Melbourne and Sydney, and that's what's going to push house prices up in those two markets, particularly this year, I believe.
What you're pointing out, a few people have forgotten that the property market moves in a cycle, and after every boom, there's a downturn or a slump phase, and then it actually starts to pick up again slowly, and then eventually another boom occurs. So we've been in a slump for 3-4 years, initially brought on by some of the finance restrictions, and it's just that part of the cycle. So the property market is behaving like it always does.
That's right, Michael. And you can even, once we sort of move away from those black swan events and those interferences, and I think those APRA actions were black swan events to the market. Once we move beyond that we can then look at actually how our markets are performing on an affordability basis. We know with lower interest rates, that improves affordability. We've seen nearly 1.5% fall in official interest rates since the middle of 2019. And although banks have passed on around about 0.9% of that to mortgage holders, it's still a very strong position in terms of the capacity of people to pay more for property. And of course, incomes have grown as well. Migration, although having slipped considerably, has still been quite strong. And no other bits and pieces, such as first home buyer stimulus packages, have brought them into the market as well. So we can see that there's a potential for perhaps up to 10% prices growth in Melbourne and Sydney this year. Maybe more rational would be 5 to 7, but it wouldn't surprise me if we got a double figure surge, particularly in Melbourne, and strong migration, particularly into Brisbane and Perth, will certainly push house prices up there and maybe even towards double figures. But remembering that Perth median house price is still well below where it was, in fact, 12% below where it was at its previous peak 7 years ago. And Brisbane has a lot of drive at the moment, particularly from those safe haven perceptions from southern states migrants that are looking to relocate into Brisbane. And Brisbane is a much more affordable market in terms of house prices compared to Melbourne and Sydney. So it is all about that catch-up energy. It's about using the capacity to have property that's more affordable because your mortgage payments are lower and your incomes are higher. That, I believe, will see a more of a normalised cycle this year, Michael. And once we've hit that catch-up mark, it'll be a much gentler period going forward. But as you said, I guess we have to expect the unexpected that will interfere in all these quite stable predictions.
Sure. Well, one of the things that's changed is consumer confidence. In fact, consumer optimism, a number of different organisations measure that. ANZ Bank, Westpac recently, Finder did a survey showing that 67% of Australians think it's a great time to buy a property, up from 42% at the beginning of last year. So they're more interested. But when you look at savings rates, Australians have actually stashed their cash. They've got money to be able to do something. They haven't spent it as much on holidays or overseas, and interest rates are low. So all the bits of the puzzle are falling into place, aren't they?
Well, the savings ratio, of course, has increased, but it's come from very low levels, Michael. And that's because disposable income growth has been low. So people have had to use their savings just to survive. So obviously, with doubt over the outlook for the economy in regard to the labour market through coronavirus, people have been incentivised to save more. But also, there's been significant government inputs to household budgets in terms of JobKeeper particularly. So again, some incentive to put things away until, I guess, the fog cleared, which it's starting to do now. So in terms of consumer sentiment, we even saw during the real depth of the shutdowns, Michael, that property transactions were still occurring, which showed that perhaps sentiment is becoming stronger in terms of its offset to a lot of the negativity that is promoted in terms of the economy or the housing market. And buyers and sellers are just basically ignoring that type of, I guess, narrative more than they have previously. And I guess that reflects the resilience of our housing markets, particularly over the last 3 years, Michael.
Andrew, the buyers are back in the market and sellers are selling, but not as many at the moment. So buyers are coming into 2021 in a market with significantly less stock than 12 months ago. Now, we know buyers are sellers and sellers are buyers, but a few more people are going to have to put their properties on the market. Otherwise, with supply and demand going to push up pretty quickly in the first part of the year.
Well, I think, look, firstly, Michael, the latest data, my data shows that, and that's from my housing market, of course, shows that we're tracking higher for new listings around about 14% higher over the first 3 weeks of this year compared to the same period last year. So new listings are higher, and also new sales are tracking similarly higher so far this year compared to the same period last year. I think the lower number of listings is because properties are selling, Michael, and that's reducing the actual stock of property that's on the market. So we're seeing higher levels of actual churn, with those properties that are for sale are being sold. And that, of course, is reducing the number of properties that are advertised for sale. But sellers are quite happy to take advantage of this market at the moment. And of course, as you suggested, most buyers are sellers and sellers are buyers. We get into the real business end of the season in about a week's time, 2 weeks' time, when the auction markets start up again. And I can also tell you, Michael, that forward estimates of auction activity in terms of sellers over the first weekend in February are certainly also looking higher than where they were over the same first weekend of the market last year.
Well, Andrew, I think one of the other things that's making people confident is the certainty that interest rates aren't going to go up for a while. That was always a concern, not of yours, not of mine, but the media kept scaring people, don't borrow, interest rates are going to go up. And the other fear that seems to have disappeared, we know the facts have showed it's not going to happen, is that mortgage time bomb, the fiscal cliff we were going to fall off. Yes, people are repaying their deferred loans, aren't they?
Well, that's right, Michael. And I think you put it quite appropriately last year when you said it wasn't a cliff, it was perhaps a step, but it might not even be a step. Now, we're not a nation that really gravitates towards being supported by government security measures, social security measures. And I think Australians, once they had the opportunity to get back to work, got off JobKeeper, got back to work. And it's the same with those mortgage holidays. We've seen a raft of those that were taking advantage of those mortgage holidays now back paying their normal mortgages. And again, it's, you know, been a real offset to those negative predictions that were made in regard to the ongoing potential for mortgage holidays. And of course, what would happen when JobKeeper was eased. But I think it'll be a blip, if that, in the progress of the economy and our housing markets this year.
Well, there is one sector that's still going to have a few challenges, and that's the rental market. And even that's actually a two-tier market, isn't it? Housing rentals seem to have held up reasonably strongly around Australia, but apartments rentals, and particularly in the inner CBD and around the universities, they're suffering, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. And it's interesting that house rents have actually increased generally in most capital city markets over the past 12 months. And rentals for units have also shown some upward movement, except for those areas in inner city, inner suburban Sydney and CBD Melbourne, where rents have been down in some suburbs up to 20% over the past year. Now, vacancies are still for units in Melbourne and Sydney are over 20,000 currently. It's interesting that we're still seeing that stabilise those number of vacancies. It's not increasing, and there's still reasonable appetite from prospective tenants for these vacant properties, Michael, but it's going to be a long journey back to the rental levels in those areas that were enjoyed prior to coronavirus. And that, of course, reflects the big change in border shutdown, student numbers, international tourism, Airbnb, all these things will take quite a while to adjust. But in terms of house rentals, Michael, they've actually increased over the past year and are continuing to increase. And I think there's a sense that there's a growing shortage of houses for rent in most of our capital city markets at the moment.
One of the interesting bits of news in the month of January, Andrew, was a Freedom of Information paper that was gleaned from the Reserve Bank, where some of their research suggested we could have surging house prices if interest rates remain low. And I know you dug into it because the media didn't really report the true story.
Well, it was interesting, Michael. I guess it reflects what a desert January is for property news, but so any port in a storm. The essence of it, I think that there was picked up in this statement press release. There was some acknowledgement of some research that was done in 2019, which suggested that for every 1% fall in official interest rates, that would equate to a potentially price increase of 10% over 3 years, or 30% over 3 years in real terms. I'm not sure what's so earth-shattering or newsworthy of that particular research, because the research was authored in 2019. And of course, since then, we've had a 1.5% cut in official rates, which have been passed on. Around about 1% has been passed on. So we can actually see what's happened, can't we, Michael?
Yes.
Because we've had that 1% fall. And if we look at the latest house price data, we can see that since that time, Sydney house prices have increased by 13%, around 13%. And Melbourne house prices up by around about 11%. So we're halfway into that 3-year period with the 1% drop in interest rates. And of course, we know they're not going to go south any time further because they're basically at zero. So we'll be able to look forward to testing that particular theory. And really, in essence, we are halfway through the three-year period and we're halfway to that 30%. We're up 15% more or less in Melbourne and Sydney. And of course, we wouldn't be surprised to see double-figure growth this year in Melbourne and Sydney. So that would bring us to within 5% of that 30% after the 3 years, Michael. So I don't think it's rocket science, to be quite honest. And certainly the impact of lower rates has been evident for decades in terms of house price potential. But we do have to look at other factors, and that is the starting point, whether we've started on a particular underperforming period in the housing market, which we did have, which was actually due to higher interest rates, that is higher rates or a credit squeeze to particular segments of the market that had pushed prices down. And of course, there are other factors that we've mentioned with coronavirus that perform an interruption to that cycle. But at the end of the day, we actually may see that three-year prediction bear fruit, Michael, but it was a lot different to what the media promoted. I guess they're just going to have to read these things a little bit more carefully and perhaps they'll gain a little bit more credibility in their housing market insights. What do you think?
Well, interestingly, though, Philip Lowe, the Reserve Bank governor, doesn't seem concerned about that because currently house prices are going up, not because of speculation, but because of owner-occupiers upgrading their homes and because of first-home buyers being in the market. So that's healthier than, remember, quite a few years ago when we had 50, 60% of all the properties in Sydney in particular being bought by investors. It's a healthy market.
Well, yes, but those owner-occupiers are only acting upon affordability advantages, and that's because prices are still lower than where they were 3 years ago, Michael. So why wouldn't you be buying property, particularly given that you've had interest rate cuts and income growth since then? So you can afford to pay more, and that's what's happening at the moment. This is rocket science. And one of the other features of that particular press release, Michael, which was a little concerning, was the proposition that perhaps if we did start to see higher price growth as speculated by the Reserve Bank or as with their notions of what is high or low, that we may see some interference from the finance authorities. And heaven forbid if that happened again, because they mentioned how LVR levels have started to rise. But again, they missed the whole point, although they made some mention of it, is that we're getting higher LVRs essentially because we're seeing higher numbers of first-home buyers in the market. And let's remember, the first-home buyers can now, or a certain proportion of them, can now buy, if they're lucky enough, on a 5% deposit. There's 20,000 a year that have been able to do that. So we've got to look at this in a bit more depth. I'm not sure what the credibility of that particular Freedom of Information document was, who wrote it, whether it was a school holiday essay or not, I'm not sure. But certainly, when we look at it a bit more closely, especially in those predictions, in terms of predictions, I think, yes, well, we may get that 30%, but after that, it'll be as flat as a tack.
Well, let's hope APRA has learned their lessons and the other regulators not interfere and not make credit more difficult. As we know, at the end of last year, Josh Frydenberg said the opposite, that in March this year, they're going to loosen the purses a bit. We'll see how things transpire. So while there's still many challenges ahead for our economy and for our property markets, I think there's many reasons to be optimistic for 2021, and selected segments of our property markets are going to do very well over the short term and in the long term. Andrew, this is the first of our regular weekly Property Insider videos, and there's going to be lots of news to discuss this year. So I look forward to having another great year together.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. Thank you.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you. But before I do, I just want to make it clear that what you just heard, the chat I just had with Andrew Wilson, was the recording of our regular weekly Property Insider videos that appear on the YouTube channel and on Property Update. Now, they're not normally as long as that, but at the beginning of the year, we thought it was important to go into more depth. But if you'd like to be kept up to date with what's happening in our property markets, go to propertyinsiders.info or just subscribe to my YouTube channel, and every week you'll be up to date with Andrew and my discussion about property. But there's more than that. You should actually take advantage and set yourself up for the opportunities that are going to present themselves this year in property. And if you're wondering how to take advantage of the new property cycle, you can trust the team at Metropole, my team at Metropole, to provide you with direction, with guidance and results. Whether you're a beginner just starting off, whether you're a seasoned investor, we'd love to help you. We could start off by helping you formulate a strategic property plan or review your existing portfolio, and we're going to help you take your property investment to the next level. In interesting times like this, even though the market's going to grow well, there are certain sectors that are going to outperform, and that's what's going to make the difference between a really successful investor and just the average. I believe you're going to need more than the buyer's agent at this time. You're going to need more than property strategist. You're going to need a holistic team around you, an advisor who takes a holistic approach to your wealth creation. That's exactly what you're going to get from my multi-award-winning team at Metropole. Last year in 2020, we won 3 international awards as Australia's leading property strategists. And we'd like to be part of your wealth creation journey. Go to metropole.com.au, find out more about our services, and I look forward to being part of your wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to talk to you about some things that are more important than just money. I talk a lot about money and property in these podcasts, but when you get to know me, you're going to realize that I believe true wealth is what you're left with after they take away all your money. Sure, money is important in some aspects of your life. It's important in those areas where it's important, and it's not at all important in other areas of your life where it's not important, is it? So while we talk a lot about money, and I believe any problem that money can solve isn't really a problem, so we need money, I'd also like to just throw a couple of other thoughts out there today just to help you realize that there are other things that you've got to concentrate on as well. A list of things that you're going to regret in the future if you don't know now. So I just want to re-emphasize some of these points that you're probably aware of. The first one is put your health and wellness above everything else. There's an old saying, if you don't have your health, you've got nothing. And this is very true, isn't it? The second thought I'd like to share with you today is take the time to do the things you love. Now, it may sound like a cliche, but maybe it's time to play more and work less. You're never going to regret taking a vacation. You're never going to regret engaging into a new hobby or spending a day with those who make you happy. In part of my busy calendar, every week I've got time set aside to spend with my children, my grandchildren. Pam and I, despite being married for many years, still have fixed time set aside to spend time just with ourselves, and we therefore appreciate each other better. So, despite money being important, I'm trying to share with you some ways of you enjoying your life. And another way is stop taking life so seriously. Why are you taking life so seriously anyway? Another thought is say what you need to say when it's there. If you love somebody, tell them. If somebody hurts you, tell them, let them know. If you're having trouble expressing your feelings, if you don't think you can tell them, write them a letter. Make sure those around you know each and every day how you feel. Another thought I'd like to share with you today is open your mind to possibilities. Don't be a pessimist. Don't be closed-minded. Optimists just do so much better in life. A further thought is follow your own path. Live a life that's true to you. It's too easy today with social media to compare yourself to others. Don't compare your chapter 1 or 5 to somebody else's chapter 30. Stop comparing yourself to others. Stop striving for perfection. Stop living a life based on the expectation of others. Also, you should stop living in the past. Right now, you need to throw away those regrets of the past. It's gone. There's no point dwelling on what could have been. Doing so is only going to rob you from the present moment of joy. Enjoy what's happening in your life at the moment. Because the past doesn't exist other than a memory. It's a mental story. It can't be changed. I guess another point is accept there are some things that can't be changed. So don't fight it. Another lesson I've learned over the years is practice mindful living. Mindful living is being aware of what's currently happening. Be there wherever you are. It slows down time. It enhances the present moment. It could fill an otherwise mundane day with awe, with joy. Now, while I do want you to become wealthy, and I do want you to have more financial freedom, and I do want you to have more choices in life, I also want you to be careful how you chase money, fame, possessions. Sure, we crave wealth, prestige, fame, popularity. We crave material things. We want to be beautiful. We mistakenly, though, think that when all this arrives, you're suddenly going to be happy. You're suddenly going to reach your goals. And that's not necessarily the case. So a lot of people I know currently are, instead of enjoying their life now, are constantly in pursuit of something other than where they are right now. They don't appreciate it. At the end of your life, your expensive BMW won't be what's flashing past in your mind. You're more likely to remember the memory of your loyal dog. So stop chasing material possessions. There's no real happiness there. It's only an ongoing endless pursuit on a treadmill, isn't it? In other words, practice gratitude. Be grateful for what you've got. If you're not grateful, you will never be wealthy. And I guess the last lesson I'd like to just share with you as I throw some ideas out at you to enjoy life more rather than just chasing money is pay attention to the sources of love in your life, and you're going to develop a growing sense of abundance and how much beauty surrounds you each day. I hope you got some benefit from today's show. And if you don't already subscribe to this podcast, please do so on your favourite podcast app. And just to remind you, the chat I had with Andrew Wilson is a weekly video session that we record and put on YouTube. You can go to my YouTube channel or just go to propertyinsiders.info, where you'll be headed to the Property Insiders YouTube channel so you can subscribe. Of course, I'd love to catch up with you in between those shows and these podcasts on social media. Just chase me on social media, Michael Yardney, or my daily property update blog. But if you got some benefit from this, why not help others take advantage of the property markets in 2021? Tell somebody about the show. I'd really appreciate if you did that. That would help me get my message out to more people. That would help you pass along the message so more of us can take advantage of the property markets and become financially fluent. And if you want to tell more people, why not leave a review for me on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to this? And if I read out your review, as I'm about to for Michael WD93, I'm going to gift you one of my books just as a way of saying thank you. And Michael left a great review saying, "Hi, Michael, I've been listening to your podcast for around 12 months now, and I just want to say what great content and life skills in the investment world that you've got. Thanks for keeping the show going. I've recently been in contact with the team at Metropole organising a strategic property plan. I'm excited for what lies ahead. Regards, Michael." Well, thank you for the kind words, and thank you for trusting my team at Metropole to put a plan together for you. And I look forward to being part of your journey. And of course, I'll be sending you a book as a way of saying thank you for leaving this review. And if you leave your review, I'd love to gift you a book too. I'll be back again real soon, twice a week. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?